All year long, we've witnessed a Congress trying to advance the same tax and spend policies that we've seen Democrats try here in the Congress for decades. The House has already passed more than $100 billion worth of tax increases. Tomorrow, they'll bring to the floor a bill that'll have another $81 billion worth of tax increases. And they've proposed the mother of all tax hikes, a $3.5 trillion tax increase. Now, these are just a lot of really big numbers. But at the end of the day, it's middle-class families who pay most of the taxes in America. These are the same families whose incomes have not been rising, who are paying higher energy costs, a higher health care cost, and higher gasoline costs. And the last thing they need is to have Congress come along and raise their taxes. But according to the Joint Committee on Tax, that's exactly what will happen under the Pelosi-Rangel plan. In fact, the mother of all tax hikes will be paid for on the backs of the middle-class families and small businesses. You know, I think the American people sent us here to work together, to help solve the nation's problems, not to compound their problems. And that's why the Republicans will stand united in opposition to the mother of all tax hikes. We stand ready and willing to work with our Democrat colleagues on making permanent the tax cuts of 2001 and 2003, helping to simplify the tax code and eliminating the alternative minimum tax. Jim McCray.
Thank you, Leader. The purpose of the press conference today is to share with you figures that we have received from the Joint Committee on Taxation, nonpartisan Joint Tax Committee, as we call it sometimes. As you know, that organization is responsible for estimating the impact, revenue impact, of various revenue proposals, tax proposals. And you have obviously heard Chairman Rangel brag about how his mother of all tax reform will help the middle class and push the burden to the rich and so forth. Well, if you just take the chairman's words at face value, you know, he's not wrong, but if you look further into his bill that he filed and the assumptions in the baseline of his bill, they are these. His bill assumes the revenues from continuation of the alternative minimum tax, or revenues equal to the continuation of the alternative minimum tax. His bill also assumes the expiration of all of the 2001-2003 tax cuts. So, we asked the Joint Tax Committee to put together an estimate for us comparing what people in this country in all income categories paid in taxes in 2006, when the AMT patch was in place, when all of the 2001-2003 tax cuts were in place, and compare their tax burden under the chairman's bill for the next 10 years. And that's what these figures show you. In 2011, which is the year, of course, after the tax cuts expire, you're going to have $334 billion of tax increases, people paying tax increases, and only $9.1 billion in tax cuts. And in 2017, it's even worse, $440 billion, and then $12.4 billion in tax reductions. And over here, it's even more dramatic. These are the number of taxpayers who would get a tax cut versus the number of taxpayers getting a tax increase. 2011, $9 million 9 million taxpayers get a tax cut under the chairman's plan in 2011 compared to what they paid in 2006, and 113 million get a tax increase in 2011 compared to what they paid in 2006. Now, to us, that's the reality baseline. That's reality for taxpayers. Taxpayers want to know, am I going to pay more in taxes next year or less in taxes? This clearly shows that the vast majority of people would be paying more in taxes under the chairman's bill than they paid in 2006. Don't tell me, if I'm a taxpayer, what the CBO baseline assumes due to the expiration of some provision that was sunset due to the reconciliation rules in the Senate. I don't care. I know what I paid this year. I don't want to pay any more next year. That's the reality baseline. And that's what these charts clearly demonstrate, that the chairman's bill, his mother of all tax reform, is indeed the mother of all tax hikes. Math. Simple math.
Well, thank you, Mr. McCray. I think I can actually add one fact to that that might be helpful. I will say, I said a couple of weeks ago when this bill was rolled out, that seldom in politics do you get a gift like this. I think this will be the gift that keeps on giving. This is going to be the gift that the more you look at it, the more the American people figure out what's happening here. And to add to the chairman's analysis of what happens to families, in this case families that make between $20,000 and $200,000. Families that make between $20,000 and $200,000 in 2011, 94 million people in that group will get a tax increase. 800,000 will get a tax decrease. 94 million people in that group of families that make more than $20,000 and less than $200,000 will get a tax increase. 800,000 will see a tax reduction. When you come up with this kind of tax package, people that work for a living, people in the middle income areas of the country, are the people who are going to pay the bill. There's no other way to collect this kind of taxes. And that's what the analysis, the Joint Tax Committee analysis shows. This was the group of all incomes, but when you take this and make it the group that would be just between $20,000 and $200,000, 94 million people see their taxes go up. Less than a million people see their taxes go down. Mr. Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Whip. You know, it's frequently said around here that everybody's entitled to their own opinion, but not everybody's entitled to their own set of facts. And Mr. McCreary has provided us with the nonpartisan, unbiased evaluation of this mother of all tax hikes, which clearly bears out that small businesses and the middle class will feel the pain of Charlie Rangel's vision for the American economy. And it is the small businesses, the innovators, the middle class who bring prosperity to this country. And his tax bill will raise all of their taxes so that a very small number of people can see a lower bill. So the overwhelming impact of his plan for taxing middle America will be negative. It will impact your downtown restaurant, your barbershop, your small businesses that's trying to decide whether they're going to add another employee or whether they're going to have to pay more in taxes and put that money into Uncle Sam's coffers instead of into another family's pocketbook or wallet. And where does all this additional money go? It goes to pay for things like a $3 million golf grant airdropped into a defense bill. It goes to pay for $160 million finding its way to Johnstown, Pennsylvania. It goes into relieving the audit responsibilities of some friends of Charlie's who live in the Virgin Islands. The underlying bill that we will be asked to vote on tomorrow, potentially, which represents the Democrats' vision for taxing in America, hurts the middle class, hurts small businesses who are already dealing with higher energy costs, greater regulation brought on by this new majority, and greater uncertainty about what their future holds because they see the marriage penalty coming back the death tax coming back, higher rates coming back. And this is the same Congress that has defined in one bill $85,000 in income as being so impoverished that you deserve free health care, and now saying that $150,000 is so wealthy that you should have to pay an additional surcharge on top of your already overburdened tax responsibilities. That's not the direction that the American people would like to see our economy go. It's bad for small business, it's bad for Main Street, and it should not be allowed to become law.
You know, when I look at what the Democrats are doing here with Charlie's math, you know, I just ask myself one question. Are they out of their minds? You know, it's almost as if Charlie Rangel and Nancy Pelosi are under this dome, oblivious to what's going on in the world around us. I mean, it's obviously the dollar is reaching historic lows against other currencies, the lowest level in 57 years to the Canadian dollar. And we saw yesterday a huge reflection of the waning confidence in the international finance markets when China chose to swap out $1.4 trillion of its reserves into stronger currencies. Then, you know, look at the reflection on the Dow. I mean, it went down 2.7% yesterday overnight. It lost, I think, approximately 370 points. Clearly, the international markets are looking at, and the international financial players are looking at the American economy and wondering in which direction are we going. Then let's look at the impact, the real impact on American consumers and families. Obviously, the subprime crisis has generated a huge concern in the credit markets, and that's part of why we're seeing such volatility. And over the next year, or year and a half, we will see upwards of 2 million loans set to adjust under the terms of the mortgages. It is expected that there will be 400,000 resets per quarter starting in 2008. Again, these are the loans that were generated in 2006 by the families that wanted to access the new financing models. And they say that the underwriting terms then were a lot looser, so we will probably see a lot more foreclosures. So you've got families facing real problems as far as their home ownership is concerned. Then look at the price of oil. My gosh, I mean, we are facing the potential for those families living in the Northeast having home heating bills of $2,000 just to heat their homes for the next heating season. You've got all this coming to bear, and yet the Democrats want to sit here and embark upon this insane attempt to raise $3.5 trillion, that's with a T, trillion dollars in taxes. And as was said earlier, it affects American families and American small businesses, the chief job generator in this economy. This bill is nothing but a job killer, and I believe that as the details come out of Charlie's mini math tomorrow, and the larger mother of all tax hikes, the American people are going to begin to see the return of Jimmy Carter all over again. You know, of the poor Democrat fiscal policy, poor economic management that led to inflation spiraling out of control and an economic recession. And I think at these times of uncertainty, it is probably an understatement to say that this move is irresponsible.
Mr. McCreary and Mr. Cantor, you described this as a reality baseline. I assume that means you're assuming there is unpaid for AFP fixes for the next decade. How much would that add to the deficit, Mr. Cantor, given your comments about the Chinese becoming reluctant to buy U.S. debt at the weakened dollar? Aren't you creating deficit problems without a prospective investor?
Well, what I've said to the chairman all year long is, look, we ought to do tax reform. We have the AMT looming. We have the expiration of 2001-2003 tax cuts looming. All this, they're going to expire in 2010, after 2010. You got the AMT that is built up so that now
if we do nothing, 21 million additional taxpayers, in addition to the 4 million that now pay under the AMT, will be paying under the AMT at about an average of $2,000 per taxpayer increase in taxes. We ought to handle all this in the context of overarching tax reform. And necessarily, as we are putting together a newer, modern, more modern tax code, we should look at the corporate rate, we should look at competitiveness, we should look at job creation, and part of that formula would be to look at the variable of how much do we need to run this country in a responsible way. We're not doing that. We're not engaging in that debate. To the chairman's credit, he put out a bill, the mother of all tax reform, according to him. He knows better. It's not the mother. I mean, it's not that big a tax reform. But he did put something out there. I commend him for that. But I think his bill underscores the need for a nationwide discussion of what kind of tax system we need for this century, not for last century when we were the biggest, baddest bear in the woods, but for this century in terms of competitiveness. And as part of that discussion, we ought to say, okay, what do we need? Do we need the historical average since 1965 of 18.2% in revenues, 18.2% of GDP in revenues? Do we need a little higher than that, a little lower than that to promote more economic growth? But let's have that discussion. What the Democrats' paygo rules, and this is the crux of the matter. Charlie's bill, Chairman Rangel's bill, illustrates clearly that the paygo rules that the Democrats have instituted in this House will lead us to 20.1% of GDP coming into the federal government in the form of revenues, taxes, in 2017, 20.0% in 2016. A lot of us think, as Eric Cantor just said, that's a job killer. That makes us far less competitive in the world market. We should have that discussion.
To follow up, so, the reality baseline assumed deficits, since you're assuming they're going to pay for it.
Well, look, the reality baseline is a taxpayer's, from a taxpayer's vantage point. That's the reality baseline. Am I going to pay more in taxes next year or less in taxes? That's the reality to the taxpayer, not some mythical CBO baseline that has to, under law, take into account expirations of tax provisions that have sunsets in the tax code, regardless of the reason for those expirations. It has to take into account revenue coming in from the AMT. But when you put all that together, it's a huge tax increase, and the Democrats are basically endorsing that huge tax increase. We are saying that is wrong. Congress ought be endorsing that size tax increase over the next 10 years, but his bill does that.
But does the Joint Committee estimate assume a deficit as a result of this reality baseline?
The Joint Committee doesn't estimate deficits, CBO does. But the CBO baseline assumes a balanced budget in 2012. The President's OMB's baseline assumes a balance in 2012. I can write you 12 other baselines that assume a balanced budget in 2012. I can do one for next year if you want me to. So what? We're not having that discussion. That's my point. We're not having that discussion, and we probably won't have it this year or next year, unfortunately. My hope is that congressional candidates will talk about it in 08, presidential candidates will talk about it in 08, and in 09, after we do a patch on AMT this year, a patch on AMT next year without paying for it, we shouldn't have to pay for it, then finally, in 09, when Bush is out of the way, you know, no, Democrats don't want to deal with Bush on anything big, then we'll have a new president and we can get to tax reform. But in the meantime, don't make matters worse by increasing taxes.
Mr. Bain, will you propose a sustained veto on the labor
aid? I would defer to the whip, but he's not here. But I believe that we will.
Mr. Leader, on this bridge fund bill for lack of something tomorrow, What do you make of this? What do you make of the effort to draw down the war in Iraq within a year, Speaker Pelosi is asking for? Is this something that that some people in your caucus see is somewhat viable because they're concerned about what's going on?
I think that the proposal that we're beginning to hear about trying to handcuff our generals and starve our troops in harm's way is ill-advised. We are succeeding in Iraq. What we need to do is continue to consolidate our gains, have the Iraqis take more responsibility for their own future, and stay on schedule to bring our troops home. There is a schedule out there that the Pentagon, General Petraeus are working off of that will allow a significant number of our troops to come home over the next year. And there's no way really to speed it up much, as it was pointed out earlier this year. Even if you wanted to bring all the troops home tomorrow, it would take nearly 2 years to bring all of our troops and their equipment home. And I think that the plan that General Petraeus is following is succeeding. He's due to report back here in March. But everything that's happened over the course of the summer, everything that's happened all during the fall, is leading to real success that our troops are having in Iraq. And I don't want to do anything that will upset their ability to have a real victory there.
But aren't some of your members jumpy about Iraq and might see this as a vehicle to possibly cover themselves?
I think all of our members are beginning to understand that there is real success in Iraq. That's why it's not on the front pages of the papers anymore. You don't see it on the nightly news programs anymore. And frankly, you don't even hear much discussion of it anymore. And as long as we're continuing to have success, as long as our soldiers are continuing to move out of harm's way and have Iraqis more out front, I think that that the Congress of the United States will not put these kind of handcuffs on our generals or on our troops.
Just to follow up on that, is a breach fund really needed for war funding right now? I mean, some of your preparers say there's enough money to keep the Pentagon going through early next year when you could actually do the supplemental. But secondly, could you respond to the fact that the Democrats are putting the Army Field Manual requirements in this bill to deal with the issue of torture?
When it comes to the first point that you made, which was the bridge fund, under the current continuing resolution, they're able to spend at a rate equal to the daily rate under the supplemental that was passed back in June. Under the language in the continuing resolution that will come to the floor as early as today, that will carry the government through December 14th, that same language is not in there. They cannot spend on a daily rate as they did under the supplemental, and they're going to have to take funds from other Pentagon programs to pay for our troops in Afghanistan and Iraq. Now, they can do this for about 30 days, but once we get into December, this will become a very big problem for our generals in terms of trying to make sure the troops have what they need in Iraq and Afghanistan, and shouldn't happen. With regard to the field manual, I'm not familiar with it.
Mr. Boehner, you made an almost daily plea to get the veterans funding bill going. Do you folks unequivocally support the additional money the Democrats put into the veterans budget, or do you support President Bush's position, which is that money above his request?
I think if you look at the program, if you look at the House and Senate passed bills, almost all Republicans and Democrats supported the military quality of life bill, which included the extra money for veterans' health.
Yeah, but the question was, do you agree with Bush that the 3.7 that's added has to come out of other programs of domestic?
I think we'll let that debate go on between the Democrats and the White House. In the meantime, I'm not part of the Democrat Party, and I'm not part of the White House. So we'll let them have that debate. Thanks.
Aren't you at the